Hi, this is Zeke, and I am here with the beloved Tommy Thurston for this week's episode that we are both very excited about.
Ready. I am ready to talk.
Yes. We're excited to be here this week to talk about something that is near and dear to both of our hearts. I think I can say that and mean that for both of us. This is something we bonded over early on in our friendship, way back in the day, but something we haven't like truly talked about, and sadly, unfortunately, haven't ever
dissected.
Something we haven't ever watched together, which was a missed opportunity for us.
How have we not? What?
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Well, that needs to change after this episode.
Yeah, yeah. Next time I'm back in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Which, by the way, hello from New York.
Hi from New York. How are you liking it?
I am loving it so much more than I thought I would. I knew I would love it. I knew I was going to feel strongly about it. And the speed at which it like felt like home was shocking. I think obviously coming from Chicago was a big help, being in Chicago for the last 12 years. So it didn't feel like I packed everything up, moved across the country to a big old city.
Good. Yeah. That's because I know that is the feeling that a lot of people get when they move there. So I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah. And maybe it's because I live in Brooklyn and not in Manhattan. But living in Brooklyn, I'm like, I don't think I never need to live in Manhattan. I go to work there 5 days a week, and I'm all over the island because of the locations that I have to visit and check out. And on the weekends, I'm like, I don't want to leave Brooklyn. And I am in love with Brooklyn.
It's seriously my favorite. Like, all of my old roommates live there. I have so many friends that live in Brooklyn, like more so than I do anywhere else in New York. And every time I visit, I basically just stay in Brooklyn because it's just the best.
Yeah, it's truly like Manhattan without the tourists, especially the parks.
Absolutely.
I live right here in Park Slope. Literally at the end of the block right here is the park. And my God, it's amazing.
Oh, and during summer, all the art fairs and stuff that they have there.
Oh my gosh.
It's so amazing.
Yeah. I mean, like even in the fall, it feels like 3 days a week, there's like an open market right there. And then the entire weekend, half of the park is always some type of like farmer's market or something like that.
Yep. Incredible. I can't wait to come visit.
Anyway, back to this week's topic.
Yes.
This week's topic, we're bringing you midnight margaritas. We're bringing you chocolate cake for breakfast. We're bringing you someone left it on the porch.
We're bringing you blood on the moon.
We're bringing you the broom fell over, company's coming. This week's episode is practical magic, and spoiler alert,
woo!
It's gay.
Yeah, it is.
This movie, I wish I could, I can't even remember the first time I saw it because I've been watching it, I think literally at least once a year ever since the late 90s. Do you remember your first time seeing it? Was it always a part of your life or were you older?
So it's been a part of my life for a really long time. I want to say the first time I ever watched this movie was with my aunts, which I think is very perfect.
So perfect.
If you think about it in context with the movie, because it's like, you know, it's all about the aunts and the witches. And I think the first time I watched it was with my aunt Andrea, and she introduced me to it. And then we just kind of started a tradition of watching it every year. As I got older and I kept watching it more and more, I was like, wow, like this has made me gay for sure. Like everything about Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman in the film, I just wanted to be growing up. Their long hair, their witchy vibes, their blood sister ship, I guess you want to say. Just everything about them is just so magical and incredible, and I'm obsessed. I have so much to say.
Yeah, I mean, ever since the first watch years and years ago, I wanted to jump off my roof with an umbrella. And I would jump off everything. I would jump off trucks. I would jump off like porches. I was always jumping off something with an umbrella. in the fall, yep. pretending I was floating on down.
Absolutely. I also did that. I think that's maybe a thing because yeah. I remember specifically grabbing my umbrella out of my garage growing up and just going to like things where I was like, okay, I'm not going to die if I like jump off of
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
But then just like trying it out and being like, okay, I am a witch.
Yeah. And then like sometimes you would jump and you would be like, whoa, I think I was falling a little slower than I normally do that time. I think it's uh-huh. that was magic. But also how crazy, a lot of crazy things about this movie, but how crazy that when I'm telling people about this film and they haven't seen it before, like, oh, who's in it? I'm like, get this. Stalker Channing, number one. And then usually they're like, uh-huh. huh? And then I'm like, all uh-huh. right, Sandra Bullock and Nicole uh-huh. Kidman playing sisters?
Uh-huh. uh-huh.
Insane.
Like, unreal. Diane Weiss. Like, there are, the list goes on and on. Like, there's just, it is a star-studded cast. And it's, like, unexpectedly a star-studded cast because, like, the like side characters from the town start coming yes. in and you're like, oh, I've seen her in like a billion things. And then you look her up and you're like, oh my God, she's in all my favorite movies. Yes. Like it's stacked.
Like the, who is, and I can never remember what she's from, but the curly haired friend that works in her little shop with her.
Who plays Carla, you mean? The blonde, like witchy looking one.
Yes.
The tight ring like yes. curls. Her name is Chloe Webb.
What is she from?
I have it pulled up. I can't remember, but you're so right because I've seen her in something else. Like I watched it last night just to make sure I was fresh for today.
Yeah.
But I have seen her in something else and I don't remember what. But yeah.
Do you think these people were stars back then? Was this a star-studded cast when it was released?
I definitely think like some of the townspeople, like for instance, the woman who plays Linda, who is also in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
She's like the sweeter, like mom type role.
She's the homely. We can say that.
She's the one that's like, okay, ladies, let's clean house.
Yes.
The part where like at the end, where Nicole Kidman dusts or like the dust of Jimmy,
that's his name.
Yeah. Falls to the floor and she like says that or whatever, like that lady, she's been in like everything. Oh. But like when she first was in this, I want to say like that was earlier on in her career, but since then she's been in like everything.
Yeah. What do you remember most about your first time seeing this movie? Or maybe not the first time, but earlier times watching it as a wee little Tommy?
I definitely remember the long hair. Like that definitely sticks out to me. Like really hard, like thinking about like how long Sandra's hair was and how long Nicole's hair was and the aunts, like it was just like, I think like when you're like a little gay teen, you're literally looking for like those outlets, right? Like I remember looking at Ariel like as the Little Mermaid and thinking like, I love her hair, like I want to wear her hair, like like that was such a thing for gay boys. Like we loved like dressing up our dolls and like, you know, doing things that like we didn't really feel like we could do as like boys back then.
Yeah.
Like it's different now, but back in our day, like we had to like hide that stuff. I remember watching Practical Magic and thinking like, wow, like I wish I had their hair that I could just like flip around and like be super witchy with.
Something that always stuck out to me that every time mm-hmm. I watch it, I'm like, yes, this is such like a core memory for me. Is in the very mm-hmm. beginning when Sandra and Nicole are the younger versions of themselves, the clearly upset woman comes to the door banging, like, please, I make him love me. And they do the little uh-huh. needle spell and they take the needle and go right through the pigeon uh-huh. or the dove. And oh my gosh, that I love that every time. And when I'm watching it yeah. with someone new, I'm like, how are they going to react whenever they see this?
It's traumatizing and you don't expect it.
Yeah.
And it's, I want him to want me so bad he can't stand it.
Yes.
And it's just a quick little prick and you're just like, it's like, it's truly a gay gas.
And then she goes, careful what you ask for.
Uh-huh.
And I want to see that story. I want to see, I need like a side project that is that woman's life. And then what happens after that spell is cast.
Absolutely. And if you watch closely, she comes back for the end when they're doing the coven moment to help Jillian when she's possessed by Jimmy's his spirit. She comes back.
She's part of the phone tree.
Yeah, she's part of the phone tree ladies.
Also, how that, so the phone tree part was the first time I think that we see the two girls as adults doing magic. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And we only see one of them. Well, it's up for interpretation. But I remember that scene and being just watching it like, like, fuck yeah. Like, yes. Fuck them up, Nicole.
Uh-huh. Hold on to your husband's girls. I love that part.
And she was...
Every time she would do that part, I would do it with her. Like, I would do the same, like, motions she does with her hips. Like,
she would do it and then go, whoa!
Whoa!
So good.
And then, like, the pin smacked to the face. Yeah. Like, oh. It's brilliant.
So whenever, like, yeah, that woman gets slapped in the face by nothing, the little pop. And she screams, and Sandra Bullock is like, what? I didn't do that. And then whenever the phone tree bit happens and it's all her name at the top, she's like, now I did that. Do you think that, who do you think slapped the girl then? Do you think maybe Sandra Bullock gave a little?
It's funny you mention that because I was watching that part closely last night because I was like, we're going to talk about this tomorrow. I know for sure we are.
Yeah.
And here we are. And I remember thinking, I think Nicole definitely did both of them.
Okay.
Like, Jillian definitely did both, but she didn't want to make Sal mad. Yeah. Like, she wanted her to, like, think that she was there for the good for her. But, like, also, like, those bitches deserved it. Like, sorry. What do you think? Do you think Sandra did it?
This was the first time watching where I thought maybe Sandra did it.
That's an interesting take. I honestly, I would roll with that too.
Because even if she did do it, she would never admit because she doesn't practice magic, you know?
Right, exactly.
And I'm sure every now and then she lets something slip, you know? I mean, stirring her coffee, you know, like, there's like also,
which is iconic.
Yes. Yes. Even still as a 29 plus year old man, when I spin, I'll spin, like, if I have something that I'm stirring with, I'll stir it fast and then I'll let it go. And then I'll just go and make it do it.
Just so you can watch it.
Yes.
Oh my God.
How important to you were the aunts?
So important. And going back to what I said earlier, like, my first memory of this is watching it with my favorite aunt, my god aunt. And I think she introduced me to it, to be honest. If I'm remembering correctly, I think it was her. Wow. And that bond that's between them and the aunts is very strong. And mine was always very strong. Like, as a little gay boy, like, I felt protected and comforted by her. And she knew the real me and she accepted the real me. So because of that, like, when I watch this movie and I watch how close they are with their aunts, it's very, very special and, like, hits, like, a very close place to home for me.
Yeah. So maybe for some people who might be listening that haven't seen Practical Magic, I guess we should have done this a little earlier, but we got carried away, sucked into the magic.
Yeah.
What's your, like, 1 minute spiel trying to sell Practical Magic to someone?
Let's see. If you want a movie that takes you back to the late 90s nostalgic time period that we lived through, and you want to see Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman at their absolute hottest playing two of the most badass witches you've ever seen, along with Stalker Channing and Diane Weiss, who are legends as their witch aunts, and you want to see something that's going to bring you, like, that vibe, that fall vibe, that Halloween, that 90s nostalgia, but also, like, the most beautiful soundtrack you've ever heard that, like, makes you instantly think of fall, it's Practical Magic.
Yes. Okay, speaking to that real quick, probably,
yeah,
not only is this movie gay, but that soundtrack is literally, it screams faggot.
It takes you to new heights.
It is... I mean, this kiss, having that in, I mean, I think that's like, this made that song what it is, what it became. Do you remember the music video for This Kiss by Shania?
Yep, I sure do.
Ugh, so good, so good.
I mean, that scene in the movie, like, if you're not going to watch Practical Magic after this episode, like, first of all, shame on you. But second of all, like, if you're going to just watch a clip, watch at least Sandra Bullock running through the garden, running through downtown to go get her man to this kiss, and those cut off jean shorts and that long ass hair and all the dogs chasing her. It is seriously, it is burned into my memory.
Yes, the way she jumps into his arms, the strange, just absolute stranger.
And the part that gives me the chills the most, oh my God, I can't even, like, I have chills just thinking about it, is when Diane Weiss, like, looks over her shoulder as she exits the yard, like, she's running, she's taking off.
Yes.
And Diane Weiss's character, Jet, she's one of the two aunts, she looks over her shoulder and she goes, "Most excellent." And it gives me chills every time to this day, and I've seen it like 8,000 times. For people who don't know it, the aunts had, they had their hands in a spell which involved bringing this man that didn't exist before to Sandra Bullock's life so that she could fall in love. But I won't give away too much if you're planning on watching.
So it was supposed to just be like a fun little spell, a little fling
yes.
to get her out of her
yes.
out of the dumps, because yep. just a brief little synopsis, the story is about this family of witches. They're from a very long line of witches, and their great 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 grandmother, who was here during the Salem times, was tried as a witch and notorious
Maria Owens, notorious
for being promiscuous with everyone's husband, which good for her. Tried as a witch, does a little spell during her hanging and breaks free, and ultimately suffers a great heartbreak and doing something she thinks will be good for her and her family to come, puts a spell on the entire line of Owens girls that any man that they will ever love will drop dead so that they'll never fall in love and never have to deal with the grief caused by a man or whatever is brought along with it. And that happens throughout that generation, leading all the way up to these two sisters whose mother heard the beetle, the sound of the cry of the beetle. What kind of beetle?
Death Watch Beetle.
Yes.
That's what they call it.
And it ultimately took their father from them, and that destroyed the mother, and she died of a broken heart. So these two, one of these two girls have sworn off magic. Sandra Bullock sworn off magic. She's never going to be involved in it. Her daughters will never be involved in it. They don't talk about it, but the daughters do know. And I love, leaving this little synopsis real quick to talk about one of my favorite parts in the movie, other than Witch, You're a Bitch, is I hope he gets chicken pox. Classic. And the callback almost at the end of the movie with the little boy that she points her finger and says that to, talking to this man that comes into town, and he's covered in chicken pox.
Absolutely. And it's so good. It's Sandra Bullock's character comes up because it's one of her daughters. They're like outside of this little apothecary that she runs and operates in, like, the downtown area of this, like, little coastal town on the East Coast. And outside of the shop, her daughters are outside, and they're being bullied by, like, the kids they go to school with. And they're chanting, witch, you're a bitch. And a classic line that Sandra Bullock has is, you think after 300 years they'd come up with something better. And it's so good. And then she goes out and she tries to intervene, and she's like, okay, like back off. Like, she's like telling the parents of the kids, she's like, they were just kidding. She was just kidding. She didn't mean it. And like the little sister is like, no, she wasn't, mom. She was not kidding. It's so cute.
And the Sandra's like character tells her, what did I tell you about casting in public? And so she says that, you're like, okay, these girls know, they're educated, they know about magic, they know that they're witches.
Yep.
And it sounds like they have some maybe basic understanding of magic and witchcraft and are allowed to cast or do things in private.
Yes.
So that was it. Oh my
that's God. That's the vibe that I get.
Okay, and for everyone listening, before Albus Dumbledore did magic to light a candle in Hogwarts, the Owens girls blew at a wick of a candle to light it. That was also, I spent half of my childhood, one, when I wasn't trying to like move pencils with my mind, I was hardcore staring at a candle, waving my hand over it, trying to light it.
Honestly, like, no shame, sometimes I still do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I will still, like, try to like, push things or move things or light. Yeah. Man. For you, what is gay about this movie, about Practical Magic? What's queer about Practical Magic?
So, other than the hair.
Truly, truly, truly.
The witchery. The fact that it is mostly a story with all women at the front. I mean, yeah, there's men in the story and they come in and out like for the love story parts of it, but it is mostly a story all about women, which I think is very gay in itself.
Yeah.
And then also I would say the fashion is very gay. I think a lot of us gays want to be witches or feel like we have a little bit of witch in us. I think, what else? The soundtrack is so gay, like we talked about.
God,
like,
yes.
Joni Mitchell,
yes.
And Stevie Nicks and Faith Hill and, you know, all these other women artists that are so wonderful. Honestly, there's really not a whole lot about the movie that's not gay. Like, I mean, we have everything gay in this movie. I mean, where it's set, like, on that little, like, in that gorgeous home that's, like, you know, like, the little seaside.
On the cliff.
It's just the apothecary, the greenhouse that's connected to the house. I mean, it's literal gay dreams. Everything about this movie is gay dreams.
The two sisters' relationship with each other, that is, not that they are gay for each other, but that, this, like...
Right.
Girlfriends like that, you know, like, yes, they're sisters,
that
but
bond.
Their bond is stronger than just sisters, right?
Yes.
Outside of the magic. Yep. Oh my gosh. The fact that the two of them did a little blood oath, they cut their hand once.
Yeah.
And from that scar, whenever they touch it and say the other one's name, the other one knows and will reach out or respond or come home or come and find them. That is, that's gay.
Your blood, my blood, our blood.
Yes. The aunts, who are questionably queer themselves,
yes, for sure,
are somehow gay icons. Part of it is absolutely the clothes that they wear, the hats that they wear, the fact that them and their friends will optionally dance naked under the moon during a ritual.
And another part of it is that they are Stockard Channing and Diane Weiss, which are gay icons.
Yes, yes, exactly, exactly.
Have we sold you on this movie yet? Like, I really hope so.
Right. I'm not to mention two strong, badass women, witches, murder the same man twice.
Yep.
Iconic line, another one. Did you kill this man? Oh, yeah, a couple of times.
And I also love when they're like, throwing him into his shallow grave, and she's like, "The worst taste in men." It's so good. There's so many lines. I could literally, like, it's unhealthy. I could say the movie from start to finish. Like, I know that much dialogue.
Yeah. I also remember thinking, it's crazy watching this, and the special effects are obviously, no special effects age well. But I remember whenever she's putting together the ingredients for the spell for the perfect man that doesn't exist, I remember early on watching it and the way that the petals fly out and float around in the sky. I just remember thinking, oh my God, how did they make that happen in real life? That's real.
You know what I will say about Practical Magic, and I'm very proud of it. It maybe, sure, some of the special effects aren't quite as what they are today. It holds up to this day.
Yes.
It really does. If you watch it, they're like, a lot of the magical parts are still very magical, and you don't laugh at them. Like you know how, like, when you watch like Halloween Town or like some other like really cheesy shit, you're like, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
When you're watching Practical Magic, you are still invested to this day, like, in what they're doing, and like, it still looks really beautiful. It holds up.
It really does. Even the way I still cringe when they're reading the spell and to bring this man back from the dead, and it says that they have to stab him through the eyeballs.
Oh my god.
They don't do it, but I remember every time I watch it, I'm sitting there thinking, like, oh my god, I'm about to watch these two women stab this man's eyeballs to bring him back to life.
They never go through with stabbing him in the eye, which is part of the spell, but he still comes back. So they skipped the part of the spell.
Yeah. I think that's why he did not, yes, no matter what, he would have come back as something different, something else, not the same person.
Yeah.
But I wonder,
but it was like a worse version or something.
I wonder if maybe they would have completed the spell correctly if he would have come back a little bit better, you know?
It's true. That's a good theory. There were so many like little moments like that I hadn't really thought of before. Cause you know, usually like when it's your favorite movie, you just like have it on in the background and you're just like quoting and stuff. But like, I was like really focusing and paying attention last night. And I was like, wow, like there's all these like little hidden things in here that if you're not paying close enough attention, you'd be like, oh wait, what was that? Like,
yeah. Like also realizing that the two daughters wear the rope necklace until the aunts return.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is so cool. A piece of it's a piece of the noose that the first Owens woman was almost hanged with,
which is so badass.
We have not hit on one of the most iconic classical pieces of film in this that time period that's carried over so well into this time, but Midnight Margaritas.
So Midnight Margaritas is another part of the film that holds a very special place in my heart. Like, to this day, I have carried on that tradition with my close-knit friends of like every Halloween, if we can and we have time together, we will have Midnight Margaritas and watch Practical Magic. Like, it's just such an iconic part in the film. And there's just something so joyous and gay and happy about like the four of them, like those four witches just like dancing around that island in the kitchen and they're wasted together. And like that is another very gay moment that you could be like, oh wow, like I do this with my friends.
Yeah,
like,
that's a kiki.
Yeah, it really is, for sure. And if you become obsessed with a movie, that will become one of your favorite lines, because Nicole goes upstairs and they're adults now, and she wakes up her sister Sally, who's sleeping, and she's like, she just looks at her and she's like, Midnight Margaret? And then they all come down the steps, and then the aunts are like, flip the switch and let the cauldron bubble. And then they all start like laughing, and then they get really wasted. And
and they're making it seem like they're making a potion, but the camera is slowly panning out and you see that they're just putting they're putting ingredients in the blender.
Yes, exactly.
And if you watch, you'll notice Diane, when she puts a lid on, it's not on all the way, and it's about to start, and you see her like panic, like and puts it on the rest of the way because it would have come off.
Yeah, I almost wonder if that was like a part they almost cut out, like that was like not supposed to be or something. But
yeah, I think, and from like things that either I've been a part of or things that people I know have been a part of, they always choose a take where someone accidentally stumbles or like almost trips going down the stairs or like forgets something and has to go back and grab it. And because the excuse that is often used is that's real. But I'm like, okay, well also the other part of that, the other side of that, doing it the any way that it's done is real. It's always just very funny to me that is sort of the line that people use when, oh, that's more real. I'm like, okay, you're watching a movie that you know is not real, and you're wanting to see the parts that are the most not film ready.
Right.
Interesting. So, and we didn't do this at the top, and maybe I'll move this around and put it at the beginning, but can you talk a little bit about like your gay journey and maybe like chat about it alongside Practical Magic in relation to the girls, the Owens girlies?
Yeah, for sure. I would say like, let's see. Okay. So in order to do this, I need to look at the year. So if I'm remembering correctly, yeah, it was 1998. So, this brings me to a point first, actually, that I wanted to make. So, you know, when Gary, the cop that she falls in love with, like toward the end of the movie, who comes in to investigate the death of Jimmy, well, he reads a letter to Sally and the like little Airbnb or whatever the places that he's staying. And the letter is the Airbnb, and it wasn't even around back then. And he's reading this letter, and it's like he lists the date, and it's March 8th, 1990, I think 8 or 97 or something, mm-hmm. that he reads off. But March 8th is my birthday, and I didn't connect the dot until last night, and I was like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
So I know, I got really excited about that. But anyway, okay, so I was born, oh God, I'm going to date myself. I was born in 86. So I was 12 at the time that this was released. That was 2 years before I came out. I came out when I was 14.
Oh my God.
And at 12, I know, I was very young.
Yeah.
I knew definitely for sure at that time that I was gay and that I was having those types of feelings for sure. So I think if I'm relating it to the film and like kind of how I grew up with it, I would say, you know, watching kind of the strong, you know, sisterhood bond between the two leading characters in the film really gave me kind of inspiration and hope to be who I wanted to be with maybe hopefully one day my, you know, chosen family. You know, at the time, obviously, I was 12. I didn't know what chosen family meant. But little did I know that that would become a thing later in my life. You know what I mean? Like that I would eventually meet, you know, these people that were my sisters, quote unquote, and that I shared that strong bond and could relate that strongly to. Also, the fact that they were just so different, like everyone in the town and the film, everyone stays away from them because they're different. That's what they say the whole movie, like when they keep referring to them as witches, they're different. I think I really connected to that more so than the fact that they were witches. The fact that these people all saw them as outcasts and as, you know, not normal to society standards. And I connected and related to that so heavily. I mean, how can you not if you're gay?
Which is, I think, something so, so common in like that witch trope, right? That sort of,
yeah.
I mean, in relation to women, right? Witches are bad, witches are evil, or they're doing their own thing, they're acting on their own free will, they're making their own choices and decisions. That's bad, that's evil. And anytime someone is referred to as that, mostly women referred to as witches, like that's bad, that's an insult. Which is, I think, has partially been proven back into like the 1400s and beyond, both ways, that like a lot of times people were just calling women who were doing their own things, living their life without a man, like going a different route than tradition said, were classified as witches, which is like not far off from being queer, you know, or being an other, you know?
Yep. And it's almost like, because back then they were being persecuted because they were going against what they were told to do, which if you think about it, you could technically relate that, you know, directly to being gay, you know, growing up and like being told that what you're feeling and thinking is wrong. Like, especially if you like I grew up in the Catholic Church. So yeah. I was taught that like that was a sin and that, you know, acting on those things was bad and not normal. And the older you got and the more you grew up and realized, wow, like there are so many more of me out there, which I think in a way you can relate to, you know, a coven or love of witches, you know, like there are others out there that are just like me, that feel like me and think like me. And it's empowering. It becomes your power. And I think that is very much something that could be, you know, a little overlapping when it comes to being gay and being a witch.
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely. There always has been, and I think always will be, something queer about witches, right? Mm-hmm. Every gay I know loved Sabrina the Teenage Witch and loved Sabrina this chaos version, right? Everyone loved Charmed, right? I just did a rewatch during COVID. Oh, that's a whole other episode. Like, oh my God. By the way, Holly Marie Combs, famously Piper, her and two other people that were originally in the show, not two of the sisters, two other cast members, just released a podcast and they're going episode by episode talking about what they remember about that time, who they met with, what the director was looking for, how it made them feel, where they were in their life. Like, oh my God, I haven't started it yet because I'm not mentally ready for that. But,
Wow, need to listen to that like ASAP. I was obsessed.
Yes. Oh, me too. I used to play Charmed literally in kindergarten and first grade and beyond on the playground. I would force my friends, Carly, my friend Emily Gallette, I would say, okay, pick, who are you? Are you Leo? Are you one of the three sisters? Like, and we would like play around the playground, like orbing, and we would say like what we're doing, like freeze or like fireball or whatever.
There's also just like something about when we were growing up, and I know you can connect to this. It was just always the powerful women characters that I related to the most. Always, always, always. I think about it like, in terms of X-Men, like I was obsessed with Rogue and Storm. Oh, those were my girls. Like,
Storm.
They were badass bitches, you know, like, or like you think of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It was about this badass girl who was, you know, killing vampires, and he wanted to be her. And the way she would stake the vampires was just so fucking fierce. She would do like tumbling, and then she would like put a stake in their heart. Like, it was just, it was the gayest thing. That was kind of my journey going through my teen years, all of these like really strong female characters. And I think that that's the exact same when I watch Practical Magic. It is these strong women at the helm of the story, and that's what the story is about, and it's empowering.
Have you read the book?
Yes, I have. And I also wanted to talk about, I just read, I think last year or 2 years ago, it was during the pandemic, I read The Rules of Magic, which is the prequel to Practical Magic, for anyone who doesn't know. And it is, the whole story is about the aunts and their journey when they were little girls up until now, which, by the way, if you haven't read it yet, I can't remember if we talked about it. It is heart-wrenching.
Is there a brother in that story as well?
There is. Okay. There's a brother as well. Yep. So it's Jet, Franny, and their brother, Vincent is his name. And they are living in like the 60s in New York City, with their parents, who obviously, like, the mom knows about the magic and she's like, absolutely not. It's kind of like Sandra Bullock's character in Practical Magic. She's like, you will not be using magic in this house. She like forbids it because she knows what will happen. And so, of course, I don't want to give too much of it away in case anyone wants to read it, but it takes you on the journey of the aunts from Practical Magic growing up into their witchery. And then there's just really gorgeous, like, heart-wrenching scenes in the book that just, like, it, like, Zeke, I'm not kidding, I had to like put the book down because I was sobbing so hard.
Oh my God. I love that stuff. That is like, anything I read, if I need to be torn to pieces, I need to be absolutely destroyed.
Yep. And Alice Hoffman, she really knows how to do it, and she knows how to get the gays.
Oh, yeah. I have both books, and I haven't read either of them. I found both of them in book boxes in Chicago, like throughout, like maybe 4 years ago, I found Practical Magic, and then just within the last year, I found the other one.
Uh-huh.
So, and I need to read them. They're on my list.
You must read them. Because it gives you really good details about the aunts, which I think you would want to know about. It gives you so much background on them that you go and watch Practical Magic and you think about it in a whole different
way. Oh my God.
Because you like think about it through their perspective instead of Jillian and Sal.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh my God. Then you're kind of like, Jillian and Sally, you're like little ungrateful bitches. Like, you don't know what women have done for you, like, to get you to this point.
How do you feel, even after reading both books, how do you feel about the aunts just up and leaving when these girls were going through it?
I personally, like, when I remember when I first watched the film, I thought, well, that's shitty of them to do to them. But as I got older, I started to realize, wow, this is just a lesson that we were taught by our parents, by our guardians, by, you know, whoever it may be that would help us kind of go through some of our tough stuff in life, which is clean up your own mess. And that was literally what they left them in a letter, was for one of Sandra Bullock's daughters in the film to deliver to them, which is clean up your own mess. And I think that says it all, which is, you got yourself into this shit. and now it's your time to grow up and figure it out on your own because we've done everything else for you.
Can we talk about the oldest daughter real quick?
Yeah.
Celebrity.
Is she?
Look, go to your list and look.
Is it Evan Rachel Wood?
Yes, Evan Rachel Wood, yes.
Oh my God! Okay, see, that's what I mean. This
yes.
cast is stacked.
Everyone in this movie made a deal with the devil for their futures, truly. And it worked out, paid off.
It really did. This list is insane. Another celebrity, Camilla Bell, who is young Sally in the movie, who makes the spell with petals that we were talking about. She was in that horror movie. She's been in a ton of teen movies, but she was in that movie When a Stranger Calls. Do you remember that?
Oh my God.
That's her grown up.
Is that like the one where the babysitter's watching the house or house sitting or something?
Yes, exactly.
That's her?
And the stranger's in the house. That's her.
Oh my God.
She's been in a lot.
Oh man.
Yeah, star-studded cast.
I love that. I love this movie. I love everything about it. Truly, there's not a horrible thing about it other than Jimmy, mm-mm. who's an absolute monster and trash human. He got what was coming for him, thank God, and I don't feel bad about it. And no one feels bad about it, so much so that in the very end, the cop is just like, couldn't find any evidence. And I wonder if anyone got that car. I wonder if the car got returned to the Nicole Kidman.
I know, because it did get towed away. Thinking back to when Sandra Bullock's character Sally is talking to Gary, the cop that comes into town to investigate that she ends up falling in love with.
Yeah.
When she's talking to him, he's basically just probing her, trying to get answers out of her. And she says, would it really make a difference if the world was shorter, a man like Jimmy Angelo? And that says it all right there. He was a bad, bad, bad person. He beat Nicole's character, Jillian. He would hit her. She would literally use some of the herbs, the belladonna. The belladonna's in my bag.
I love that. I also used to, like, when I would be in the back seat of a car and like I would be like, really? Okay, I'm gonna like through my mind see if they can hear me talking to them in the rearview mirror.
I knew you were gonna say that because I did the same fucking
yes.
thing.
And the way she and does it, she like pulls up like the belladonna's in my bag.
And it's just so iconic. And like I think back on it, and like when I was growing up, I was so stupid, and I always say it when I'm watching the movie. I say it like and do the exact like lean into the like the rearview mirror. It's just so good. But anyway, she would use the belladonna, the herbs, to drug him to make him pass out because he would get violent when he drank, and he drank all the time. So that was the only way she could stop him from beating her or from acting out, was to drug him with, you know, these herbs that they used in their spells.
And one of my favorite lines, and I say this all the time, and zero people around me ever know what I'm saying or what I'm referencing, but so often, and sometimes when I get drunk too, I'll just, because it's fun to say, just, someone left it on the porch.
On the porch.
I was somewhere not too long ago, and they were playing like an instrumental, like Hobby Lobby style version of that fucking song, and whoever I was with had never seen it, and I was so mad because I wanted to run up to everyone and be like, do you know what this is from? Have you heard this song before? Have you ever seen Practical Magic?
Which the original version is Always On My Mind, Elvis Presley.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Wait, actually, maybe it was in the Elvis movie then. Because I think I was with my friend Lady, and she had obviously never seen this movie. And I wonder if they play it in the Elvis movie at all. Baz Luhrmann's Elvis.
It was a popular Elvis song.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. I remember when we both realized how important this movie was to both of us. And I'm so happy. And I'm so happy that we got to talk about it.
Me too, because I feel like it was like, this has always been our thing together. Like every time we're ever around each other, like there's always at least one Practical Magic quote for now.
Yes. And it's usually chocolate cake for breakfast.
It's usually chocolate cake for breakfast. Or the belladonna's in my bag, or which you're a bit. There's so many. Oh, which by the way, I brought this today. You can't see it because you're listening to us, but I bring my tiger. Typically for this podcast, because Blood on the Ring. There's this, for anyone who doesn't know Practical Magic, there's this part where Sandra Bullock's character goes to pick up Nicole because she can just sense that Jillian is in trouble. Like, that's part of their sisterhood and their...
Oh, the phone rings and she knows right away it's her.
Exactly. The phone rings. She goes running into the house and she's like, what's wrong? She doesn't even ask who it is. She knows it's her. And she's like, I need you. And so she runs to her. She drives to this motel where she's like, she like finds her like next to the bed on the floor, and she's like been a little bit shaken up or beaten up by Jimmy because he's like a piece of shit. And they're like going out to the car to escape the motel, and she sees Blood on the Moon, and she goes, Blood on the Moon, Blood on the Moon, Blood on the Moon. I need my tiger's eye. I need my tiger's eye. And so she goes to Jimmy's car to get the tiger's eye, which is like hanging in the rearview mirror, mm-hmm. so that she can have it for protection. And that's when he grabs her and holds her captive, and Sandra Bullock gets in the car, and, you know, he basically threatens her to drive. But such an iconic line. So many.
Well, Tommy, thank you so much for chatting with me today. It's been so lovely to see your face and to hear from you.
You too. I feel like I could do like 3 more episodes, part 2 and 3, just of this.
Oh my God. maybe of the book. Maybe I'll read the book.
You need to read Rules of Magic.
Yeah.
You really do.
Well, so lovely to talk to you without having to send a TikTok for a reply.
Yeah. I know, which I never checked.
I know. I'm like, literally. And that's fine. Well, so great to see you. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me.
Yes. And I hope that the next time I see you is not at our wedding, which is in June of next year.
I know. All right. Well, thank you so much for... Hold on, watch. I'm going to do this thing that will play the music and I'll start fading it up. Can you hear the music or no? Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on here today. And thanks everyone for listening. This was so much fun. Check out Practical Magic if you haven't seen it. It is truly iconic. It's very gay and very fun, and classic, and great thing to do before Halloween. Do it in the spooky season. It's so fun. All right. Thanks everyone. Thanks, Tommy.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.